You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Outdoor Edge in their complete lineup of knives and game processing kits. These guys right now are doing an absolutely huge giveaway where you could win an elk hunt, and not just any elk hunt. We're talking about a 7 or 8 mile horseback ride into the backcountry. We're talking a one-on-one guided hunt. You're going to be sleeping in a wall tent, and you're going to be doing that for 5 days with the founder and CEO of Outdoor Edge, David Block. Now, if you've never been on an elk hunt before, I'm telling you right now, go sign up for this, because if you ever hear a elk bugle, whether it's at 400 yards or it's at 40 yards, it is a life-changing experience. So here's how you enter. Go to OutdoorEdge.com. There's going to be a big banner for it somewhere on their homepage. All you have to do is click on that. Go fill out some information. I think your name, your email address, maybe some other stuff. And that's all you have to do. That's how you are entered. They're going to be picking a winner, a ways from now. So you have plenty of time to enter. Go visit OutdoorEdge.com. Sign up today. Here we go.
Welcome to the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. I'm your host, Nate Thomas, and this is episode 18, talking some fly fishing, trout fishing with my dad and my uncle. Got Micah with me today.
Yeah, I thought it went really well. We're actually sitting around a table in your house that you grew up in.
House I grew up in, yep.
So it was a good time.
Yeah, it was. I knew I wanted to do a fly fishing episode, and there's all kinds of people I probably could have contacted.
Yeah, I'm sure there was somebody that we could have worked up, but who better than your father?
Dude that raised
me. And uncle.
Yeah, and I thought it was a good talk. They know a lot more than we do about fly fishing.
Well, I mean, they do it in the aspect, like we do hunting our way, and we're entrenched in it, and they do that with fly fishing. So, you can tell just listening to them.
Yeah, they spend their extra time out fly fishing.
Yeah, so, yep. And it shows.
Yep. Yeah, they're both really good at it, and they know what they're talking about. So it was a good talk. Talked about their favorite places in Missouri, different types of flies they like to use.
Yeah, some of the other states that they've been to.
And shared some stories. Just a good fish talk.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of people like listening to fish talk. So hope you all enjoy the episode. This is the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. All right, excited about this one today.
This should be a fun one.
Yeah, just me and you today, but we're going to talk some fly fishing.
That's right, and we're going to do it with my father-in-law, and I guess you're my uncle-in-law? Is that how that works?
Yeah,
I guess
so. Introduce the guys first. So this will be a fun episode for sure, for multiple reasons, but we got two guys here that taught me how to do this, but the first guy I'm going to introduce is the man, the myth, the legend, my father, Mike Thomas. Dad, how's it going?
Pretty good. How you doing?
Good.
Micah, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing good, sir.
We'll have you introduce yourself in a second, but I'm going to introduce Uncle Chuck next. Got my Uncle Chuck with us also.
Hello.
So, Uncle. And these guys are big-time fly fishermen, and we've been wanting to do a fly fishing episode, and they would be the perfect people to talk about, or talk about it.
Kind of just average Joes like us, but they, instead of spending their weekends hunting or doing whatever, they're usually fly fishing.
Yep. So before we get into all the fun stuff, I'll have you all introduce yourself first. So, Dad, why don't you tell the people your name, where you're from, and you know what we'll do here instead of asking them what their favorite thing about Missouri is? How did you get into fishing?
Okay, well, first of all, my name is Mike Thomas. I've got 3 children, 2 sons and a daughter. Nathan is my oldest, Gary, and then Amy, which is married to my son-in-law, Micah, sitting to my right.
Biggest mistake you ever made.
I live in Oak Grove, and Chuck asked me, invited me to go fly fishing with him one time, and I said, sure. It had never even crossed my mind to go, and I went, and I loved it.
How many years ago was that?
I want to say 15.
Quite a few, yeah.
Yeah, it's probably at least 15 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, I know that you fished your whole, at least my whole life, mm-hmm. but you had never fly fished before or fished for trout. When did you first start fishing, when you were a kid or whenever it was? What was the first? Do you remember the first, how you got into fishing in general?
Approximately 15, there was a pond behind our house that me and another kid would go fish whenever we could. And then, you know, life happened and I didn't fish for a long time. You know, kids, girlfriend at the time, a wife later. And so kind of got out of it, didn't really think about it. But then when Chuck invited me to go, it was like...
Kind of relit that flame a little bit. Sure,
we'll get into the gear, but he's got just as much of a problem with fly gear as I do with hunting gear.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. So, all right.
You get it honest, I guess.
Yeah, I get it. I get it honest. All right, Uncle Chuck, how did introduce yourself, tell people where you're from, and then how did you get into fishing originally?
Well, my name's Chuck, Uncle Chuck to Nathan. Mm-hmm. But live here in Missouri, lived here all my life. Kansas City, I was born, now living in Independence. But I've been fishing all my life. I can't remember the first time I went, but I know that my father used to take us to Swope Park in the lagoon. So that's how long ago it was. But I've been fishing all my life, and I've loved it ever since I've started it, and I've never stopped. But I got into fly fishing probably about 20 years ago, maybe 20-something, from a guy that I met when I had a restaurant downtown. And he heard me talking about it and asked me if I wanted to learn. I said, yeah. And he taught me, and we became real good friends. And it's been there ever since. Haven't stopped. Yeah.
Do you still fish with him?
No, he passed a few years ago, yeah. So, but I still think of him when I'm down there and just remembering how he used to cast. It was just a work of art.
He has a park bench down there.
Yeah, there is a park bench with his name on it, along with a few others.
That's cool. Yeah, that's the biggest thing. You know, Dad taught me how to fly fish. He gave me a fly rod and stuff years ago, and I'm not one of those guys that cannot do it for very long and then just pick it right back up because I suck at it. You know, there's an art.
No, you don't.
There's an art to fly fishing.
Definitely.
Being able to lay that fly right in the right spot. So, definitely different when I think last time you took me, Dad, I said, I'm just going to take an ultralight. That'll be easier.
I mean, yeah.
It is easier, that's for sure.
That's how I grew up. We always fished ultralights. I mean, I've done plenty of trout fishing and stuff, but it was always with an ultralight and a piece of corn. Caught plenty of trout that way, but.
A can of Del Monte.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I remember back in the day, we would go to in Independence at one time. Chuck may remember this, but there was a pay lake called Mirror's Lake.
Mirror Lake, yeah. It's still there. It's not a pay lake anymore, but that lake is still there.
Is it?
Yeah.
Anyway, so we would go there, and at the time, it wasn't fly fishing, but we'd use jitterbugs, hula poppers, and they all float on top. Mm-hmm. So whenever a bass or whatever it was would rise up, it was always a rush.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the same thing with fly fishing if you're using dry flies, because you're always kind of anticipating. And sometimes the trout will come up, and you're trying to match a hatch, but you're going, what is it? What is it? We're getting close, but they're coming up, and they're just knocking it out of the way. But you're going, you know. And then you'll throw it out there again, and they'll hit it. It's the craziest thing.
So is that what it is about fly fishing for you guys, that there's all kinds of fishing you could have taken up as your – we'll call it an addiction.
Yeah.
It is an addiction, yes.
It's a hobby.
No, it's an addiction for me.
We had an episode a couple weeks ago with a professional bass angler. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he's into bass fishing.
I was there, too.
What Yeah, you've been, I mean, Canada, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So what about fly fishing has made you guys kind of
stick with it,
yeah,
I guess.
Pick that as your...
Fly fishing, you're out there, you're on your own. You don't have a boat. You don't have the motor. You don't have none of that stuff to deal with. You're just out there on the stream by yourself, basically. Yes. Even fishing with him, he's still 20, 30, 40 yards away.
And the quiet.
Yeah, it's all quiet. It's everything
peaceful.
Is just... It's awesome.
The serenity of it, if that's... I mean, if I can use that word.
You're good.
That's it. That's exactly it. Yeah.
I mean, we get it. That's kind of like why when we're hunting and stuff like that. That's one of the reasons why we go, getting away from everything and just doing our own thing and, you know, being out there.
I mean, I've we went to South Dakota, fly fished in a stream there in spearfish right in town. It was a public water. There's places you can go that are private water, but fish there and on the public city stream, if you will. Went to Estes Park, did a private fishing trip there. And
so
that
you mean guided? So it was guided type thing?
Yeah, it was guided, and went on private water, and that was a blast. Most of the time, the guide rigged me with, I didn't take my own fly rods. He rigged fly rods that he had, and most of it was midges and scuds that you sink, like that nymph stage before you get up to the emerger stage and then the adult stage where you have the hatch and you're trying to match the dries on top. But that was fun. And then when the kids were little and at home, we went to Breckenridge, and I thought long and hard and had to think about where we were, but it was the South Platte River.
You talking about when you and me and Gary went on that
that guided trip, and I was that I've got some notes here, but I wrote it down. I think between you and Gary, you caught like 6 trout to my 1. That was kind of
Gary actually caught all more trout than either of us, and he don't even like fishing that much.
Yeah,
how it works
so
out.
So it's kind of like beginner's luck, and then went to North Carolina. The Smokies and fish in the Smoky Mountain National Park, those streams aren't 4 or 5 feet wide, so you're not using a very big fly rod there. So, but I've never traveled to fish until the fly fishing got into my blood. So.
Yeah.
Well, and that's it. If you're bass fishing, you got to bring your boat, your trailer, and all that. And if you're fly fishing, you grab your rod and reel. And if you fly, off you go.
Yeah. Walk a trail somewhere.
And they pack easily. You can put them on a plane if you need to.
Yep, you can. I've done it.
You've been to Canada multiple times.
Not fly fishing in Canada, but in Minnesota and California. Yeah, you just pack it and go. It's no big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny how people get into things. I mean, Mom and Dad were pretty, you know, much an inspiration to at least get me to like the outdoors. Mm-hmm. I never hunted when I was a kid, but what we did do a lot when I was young was we went camping. We were always outside. I mean, Gary and I and Amy, and we always plan outside, different than today. But I remember the first, I mean, we went camping in tents, and then you guys bought the Viking pop-up that didn't have air conditioning. Then you got the Dutchman. You know, now you got a 40-foot. Fifth wheel sitting outside, but
and right now it's you don't even know when you get to use it because
all this stuff. Yeah,
so you don't have the boat on. Now you have the 40-foot trailer that you got to drag around with you.
Yeah. And I always remember going fishing when we would camp as kids, and so that at least got me an enjoyment of the outdoors.
And got you started,
and it morphed into going after. I think because I suck so bad at fishing. That I'm like, screw this. I'm going to try.
You just don't like it as much as hunting. That's all.
Did it help you when you met Becca and then with her siblings and stuff, and they were hunters, more hunters. And
yeah. Oh, sure,
that,
yeah.
That's what got you into it.
Yeah, when you, I mean, you have a general enjoyment for the outdoors, mm-hmm. and then somebody's doing something that you try out, and you're like, this is cool.
Yeah.
It can turn into something more. You know, it's odd, though, because I enjoy fly fishing as well, but how often you see me running down to Bennett to go fly fishing?
Yeah. Well, that's what I say. You don't know, like it as much as hunting.
Yeah, just not as much.
But if you went down there and caught a whole bunch of fish, that would change your mind.
Sure, yeah. That was kind of interesting because like I said, we've talked to bass fishermen. We've talked to you all. We've talked to a guy that loves fishing river red horses.
Yeah.
Which is another river fish, but it's, you know,
it's like
not,
seasonal yeah. type thing. They come
and
up.
It's just, you know, it's interesting to hear why people like to, you know, there's guys that love catfishing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, big time. And
spoonbill.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, my stepdad and would have been my step uncle, but they loved to go down to the Osage River and snag spoonbill. So everybody has a different thing they like to do.
Well, and I mean, even in the hunting, it's the same with hunting as it is fishing. They actually really mirror each other quite a bit, mm-hmm. but some people prefer hunting turkey. Some people prefer hunting deer. Some people prefer hunting predators type stuff.
Yeah, I mean, or squirrels, rabbits, whatever. Yeah. There's a thousand things. But
and the different ways you go about it.
Yeah.
You know, some guys like Dad and Uncle Chuck, you guys are fly rod guys.
I have bass fishing
we'll talk
stuff
about that.
That I have not touched in probably 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to get rid of it because I know I will go. But
right.
But it just,
you know, my heart's in the fly fishing.
It's kind of like some people prefer going hunting with a rifle compared to a bow, or mm-hmm. you know, it's just yeah. the different ways you do things. So, what you want to talk about some gear?
Well, I was kind of thinking, let's go at it as if you were gonna take somebody out for the first time. How would you get them started? Like, what kind of equipment would you try to set them up with? Let's say money's not an object. Like, what kind of, you know, what
rich
kind of,
man. Yeah.
So I'd take them to the Orvis store.
Well, I'm just saying, in a perfect world, be like, what kind of pole, well, what kind of reel, what type of flies
you
and
don't
stuff.
Want to start off with something expensive. So you would go to like a Bass Pro and get a combo kit or something like that. They're good. They're not great, but they're good. Mm-hmm. And you can use something like that. It usually comes with flies, rod, reel, line, everything.
It's
for 100, 120
bucks.
Got
the line on it.
And then, but I mean, if I was going to show you, you got no equipment, I would take you out with my equipment. And
right.
Show you how to cast, and then we'd go somewhere and see if we can catch some fish.
Well, and I don't know this answer, but if you were to, somebody had never been fly fishing before, mm-hmm. and you were, I know this because you two taught me how to fly, and it wasn't in the water. You were teaching me how to.
Outside, yeah.
You know,
yeah. How to.
So in the yard.
You know, learning that way is what you think's the best way is if someone wants to learn how to actually.
Well, of course, it's better if you're on a stream, but yeah, I could show you how to cast right out here in your front yard.
Yeah.
And start getting the idea of it, and then you take it out and try to use it on the stream.
Yeah, that's right.
The 10 to 2, and you try to. For me, I like, you talked about equipment. Now, for me, being at 15 years, I have three fly rods. I have.
That's it?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, that's the one you're not telling everybody.
That's the only one.
Is mom in the room somewhere? Well, no, I take that back. I do have four.
Yeah, there we go.
So, but.
Six.
Well.
There's another one sitting in my house.
Yeah. Mom, no, yeah, the Clearwater. But mom told me about.
Five.
When we went to South Dakota, she bought me a Thomas & Thomas. Fly rod.
Was that just because of the name?
No.
Yes.
No. Not so much.
She bought you the rod because of the name.
Yeah. I mean, it probably helped.
Yeah.
But
she would have had no idea what kind to buy you.
Yeah. Anyway, it is a 5-weight fly rod, but the Thomas & Thomas aren't like the Orvis. Like, for instance, the Orvis fly rods will specify if they're a mid-flex or a tip-flex or a full-flex, where the full-flex, that Clearwater that I started with and I bought from Chuck's brother or cousin or somebody, from you.
Chuck
no,
Sam, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so, and that was a full flex, and that thing's just like a cane pole.
The entire pole flexes.
Yes. So, and I didn't like that. So I went from that to a T3, which Orvis doesn't make anymore. And that was a mid flex. As it turned out, in through the years, I've realized that I like the one that they call full flex, which is it's a stiffer rod, and I feel like
you mean a tip flex.
Tip flex, yeah.
Yeah.
And it loads faster. I feel like so that when the line's back behind you, it doesn't take, and you're immediately coming forward with line.
No. I'm assuming most of this stuff is probably just preference.
Or is it
kind of a situational thing, too?
No, it's what do you prefer, Uncle Chuck? I mean, are you similar to that?
I got all different kinds. I don't have a full flex, but I got mid-range and tip flex. I like them all. It just depends on where you're at and what you're doing.
In a tight spot, you know.
Smaller rod. Well, in the tight water, like in the Smokies, I have the one I didn't mention. The fourth one is called a Superfine.
The one that Elaine doesn't know about.
Well, it's Orvis Superfine. It's a 3-weight, and I believe it's a full flex. But it's for, streams that are you can step across, you know. So I've got the Thomas. I've got two. I've got a Helios 2, and then the Superfine, which is a I have a 4-weight, 2 4-weights, and a 5-weight.
I'm actually kind of surprised. I did not think I would hear Dad say that he owned a different fly rod.
Other than Orvis.
They're all Orvis except for the Thomas.
I know. Yeah. I'm surprised by that.
Well, he didn't
just
buy it.
Because of the name. I mean, are you an Orvis pretty much
all
your stuff?
Well, I was, but I still got one Orvis rod left, but I got a Hardy, and I got a St. Croix. I got a Scott. So I just whatever feels good. I mean, our buddy Matt Sutton that owns Rainbow Fly Shop, I go in there all the time. If he's got something I like, I'll trade it, you know, and get a better one or something.
Yeah, it's
like
the same
thing
with bows. Yeah, you got Matthews Bowtech.
Yeah, you go Elite. Wherever. Yeah. You just trade up, trade whatever you need to do. So
well, what happened with the T3 that I had? The reel seat was coming apart, and that's one thing I like about the Orvis because they have a 25-year warranty on them.
Yeah, they pretty much and all got
they
that.
They stand behind them, and the reel seat was coming apart, so I sent it back to them, and they don't make the T3 anymore, like I said, so.
They said tough shit.
No.
They send him a brand new one.
I had to pay $60 for a $800 fly rod.
Yeah.
Nice. That works.
That's the way they do.
So, you know, so.
And those are just rods. Then you got
that's
your reel.
Just the rods.
You got the reel.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's just as many options.
And, oh yeah. They have a Mirage fly rod or fly reel that's anywhere from $300 to $700.
Just for
a reel.
That's half the reason why you don't see people. I mean, there's probably
jump right into
but
it.
You, well, yeah. Well, you've got a guy that like me, or even Micah. You spend a lot of money on bow hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's say you get into fly fishing, you're going to be right back spending that same type of
definitely.
Money.
Right. Yes.
You know, in fly fishing. Now, yes, you can go to Walmart and buy the cheaper stuff and
that's
and do
why I
those
say
things.
Start off cheap and then trade up.
And I totally agree with that. You start out cheap. Then if you like it and it
inexpensive.
It becomes an addiction like we talked earlier. That's when you go out and go,
you put your money
I want
into
the,
it.
Yeah. I want All the nice in. Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So what about reels? I mean, is there certain reels that you think you
I got Orvis reels. I got Conic reel. I got Laggy. Those are the only two I really got. But it's not the reel. You don't really use the reel to bring the fish in. So the reel's not as important to me as the rod. So
that makes sense.
Yeah.
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 So the reel's just there. But they do have different grades.
Then why are they so expensive?
That's what I don't get. Thing spools upstream.
That's right. It. Exactly. That's
right.
The Orvis, the two Orvis I got because of LEM, and he used to have he used to get a good deal for Orvis stuff. So I bought those from him. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't pay that money for those things. They're like $200, $300. Jeez. So I got them a lot cheaper. But then I bought this Konik reel from Matt, which was, I don't even think it was $100, maybe $105, something. Just a lot less expensive than those. And it's just as fun. I mean, because right. You don't use it.
Right. I mean, that's what I would
think. But with the large arbor reel, you can get the line in a lot quicker. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the difference.
Okay. Mike Thomas and Thomas has a Sage reel on it. So they're all good reels. Like Chuck said, I have large arbor reels on all my and it just gets line in faster.
Okay. Yeah. If you get a big fish that takes all your line out, then you're using the reel.
Then it's actually getting used the one time.
Yeah. I got to get that drag set.
I got to get that fish caught first.
All right. So what about flies? I know you can go into any pro shop or something like that and buy 1,000.
9 million.
Okay.
And you can even come up with your own if you're tying your own.
That's what I was going to get into is there a benefit to doing your own flies, making your own flies, or is it just something?
You save so much money.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
For people can't see that at home, he had his sarcastic face on.
Right. Well, like with bows, we'll just put arrows.
Buy all the equipment.
Yeah, like arrows. Well, you can go out and buy a set of arrows, and they're going to fly great.
And already fletched.
Already fletched, already done. But we do it mainly because we just enjoy doing it. And you can try different things. So is that kind of why people start doing their own flies? They just want to try something.
Just another.
Well, actually, for people, they got way too much time on their hand because I just can't find the time to get
flies, so you go out to a shop and you go, well, here's the fly I'm looking for. But like in my case, for instance, when we go down to Bennett, I will use my 4 or my 5 weight, and I will use a sinking leader, and they have leaders that sink at different rates, and so I like using cracklebacks, which is you can use it as a dry fly, but you can also use it as an emerger, where you use the sinking leader, and so you sink the fly, and depending on the rate of the water, how the water's flowing, will depend on how the fly is going to sink. In other words, if you let it drift, you throw it straight out from you, and then it drifts down to your right, and the water's flowing to the right, as it flows down, it's going to rise up in the water. So it's like an emerger that's getting ready to
as the line
hatch
tightens,
and fly and fly away.
It's mimicking the hatch.
You're trying to mimic the hatch. But in my case, that's why I kind of got into tying, is because I would order some flies and I would say, okay, here's what I kind of want. And not that they weren't that way, but then I went, I can tie myself and get exactly what I want. And so your initial cost, kind of like the bows and all that stuff, your initial cost buying a vise and all the supplies.
The same thing.
It's all the same.
You can spend $400 or $500 easy. But that's kind of
not
why
that
I got
we
into,
did.
Yeah. That's kind
of, where's mom?
That's kind of why I got into tying my own.
It's another part of, I got to think of a better word, but it's another part of the addiction.
It really is.
It's the same thing with us fletching our own arrows or buying bow presses and working on the bows.
Right.
It's because, I can do these colors of fletchings and I can do it this way. And ruin a fletch or a fletching, I can replace it myself and not have to take it in somewhere. It's those sorts of things.
It kind of puts you in the situation where you're learning how everything works and what works for you, and you can tweak it.
But
to
answer
how you want it.
But to answer some of your other questions, Micah, the cracklebacks work good down at Bennett Spring here in Missouri. Also, like, and Chuck likes, it's a Renegade, it's a dry fly, but you can also sink it as
an
emerger.
It's a good fly. That was Lem's favorite.
Yeah.
A Renegade.
Yeah. So he used a great big one because he couldn't see.
If you're just starting. And you walk into a fly shop, and this was me, that like the first time ever, remember the first fly shop I ever went into was actually the one down by Bennett when you took me my first time.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been to the Rainbow Fly Shop here.
Redding Fly Shop, yeah, or Larry's.
I have no idea. Yeah. But, and I walk in and there's a case the size of a bedroom of different all these flies. I'm like, what?
Well, just think of how many different bugs they are, and most of them mimic a bug. So
if you were just starting, you walk into a shop, say like a Renegade and a Crackleback would be a good couple to go with at, up front. And,
well, depending on where you're at Bennett, that's about the go.
Well, and the other thing that matters is the color, because you could use, let's say a Crackleback. You could use a black Crackleback today, and tomorrow you'd want to use a olive, because they're not going to hit on the black one. They might hit on the olive. It's funny how that works. So sometimes you got to keep changing until you find out what's working.
Yeah. I mean, that's the part that pisses a guy like me off. It's not good enough at it. These damn things won't bite. Yeah. And I remember Dad one time.
And then we'll go down there and he'll be using a black one and hitting them like crazy. I'll do that and not get anything. And I'll change to something and hit them like crazy and his will stop. So who knows?
That's funny.
Actually, one of my favorite pictures of all time was with when my daughter, who just turned 13, which kills me, but when she was
one and a half.
Knee high to a grasshopper.
My wife actually got a picture of Kylie on the bank of Bennett Springs, and Dad was in the middle of a fly, and it's just a perfect picture. On that trip, I was getting pissed off because I wasn't catching anything, and Dad was 20 feet away from me, just
reeling
what's the
in.
Problem?
Yeah, see, that's and, what I'm saying.
He
My
turns
dad
to me,
used
I
to
said,
be able to catch him with a bare hook. And I'm like, what are you doing?
I remember Dad saying, I was like, Dad, I'm about to quit. And he turns and says, why don't you try out a marabou jig? The way he said it.
Yeah.
I think I probably scared all the fish away laughing my ass off. But,
it's
been a running joke for 15 years now.
What are you using? Marabou.
Marabou jig. People use those a lot. You know, they use... A lot of people use strike indicators.
I will never, ever put a strike indicator on.
No. I see, and that's basically like a bobber.
Bobber.
And a lot of people
similar.
A lot of people use those because they're trying to imitate the nymph stage, which is when the bugs are first hatching, not hatching at the top, but first starting to flow up, I guess. So they're using scuds and they're using midges, but they're suspending them. So they're using a strike indicator and they've got split shots down with the nymph or the scud, and so they're suspending. They've got the strike indicator or the
bobber
up here. And so
I will say this: so fly fishing's much more high class because they don't call it a bobber; it's a strike.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So they're suspending the bait. So in other words, so they throw it out there, and the bait
fly,
and the it's just
it's not bait. Go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
The nymph, or the mayfly.
Fly. There you go. You don't want anybody talking about you now, so I'm just trying to correct you.
Yeah, it's fun, though. But I'm like Chuck, so when I first got into it, Chuck invited me to go with him. So I went, and I kind of took on the same attitude as Chuck because I don't like using – now, I will use a sinking leader, which is a little different than what Chuck will do, but I still do not use the – bobber
because you don't have to you know how to feel you can feel the fish hit it.
Oh,
that's
you
the can, big reason why they use the strike indicator.
You can feel them nail it. I mean, they nail it.
You two know how to fly fish because you two freaking fly fish all the time,
right?
I mean, I swear I'll have it had to have been during the winter, and it was colder than shit outside one day, and I called Mom. I said, what's Dad up to? Him and Chuck left this morning to go down to Bennett Springs.
Said, you know, I got a picture of that, actually.
A couple days? No, just for today. They drove down to Bennett Springs to hunt or to fish in 20-degree weather. Yeah. Okay.
I get it.
That's how ate up you guys are, and I mean, that's how we are. Well,
it's not 20-degree
weather
because it would freeze. But still, you know what, though? There's nobody down there.
Yeah.
And that's
why.
Because we go down there and we go – this is nice. And we go down there on during the summer when it's when everybody and their brother's down there.
Oh,
and go,
man,
oh, my
crazy.
Gosh, that's my spot. You need to leave. I don't want to be there.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting question, actually, I was thinking about asking you guys is if you – we'll just talk about Missouri right now, and then we'll go somewhere else. But travel distance not mattering, what's your favorite place to fish, to fly fish in Missouri?
In Missouri?
Yeah.
Well, I love fishing down Taneycomo, but they run water so much – so it's impossible.
And I agree with Chuck on that.
But it'd have to be Bennett. I've been to Roaring River. I liked it too. But it's more commercialized than even Bennett is. Mm-hmm. So I'd have to say at this point, Bennett.
And yeah. I have to agree with that. Bennett, Taneycomo, they're both hatchery waters. They're, so they're a little different than like going to Colorado.
Yeah, it's like a pay lake.
It's like a pay lake.
Sure,
but still, the trout are pretty finicky. I definitely for Missouri, like Bennett the best. Taneycomo would runs a close second. The problem with Taneycomo is like Chuck said, they're if you go down there and they're running, you got units running. If you don't have a boat, you're not fishing.
Right.
Of course, I loved it when I went. This was just. Summer, not this last summer, but summer before, my wife and I went to Estes Park, and like I said, I got the guide, and I went on private water, which was really awesome because it just was. And unfortunately, I didn't get any pictures from that. But
you were busy fishing.
The guide was taking the pictures, but.
Oh.
But I caught a couple really nice rainbows, but unfortunately I didn't get pictures.
So would that be your favorite place not here is in Colorado?
Well, no, for Missouri, Bennett is my favorite, but if nationwide, I'd say Estes Park area.
What about you? Have you anywhere outside of Missouri, what's your favorite place to go?
Well, I've been to Colorado, fished on the Yampa River. And caught a couple trout, small ones, but it was really cold, like 10 degrees cold. That's when your Aunt Dana messed up her knee.
Ah.
She went skiing. I went fishing. So there, but I also went to California, Northern California one time and fished up near Redding or Reddington or Reading or whatever you want to call it. It was a blast. Beautiful, beautiful. But it, you know, I just caught a couple fish, but still.
Yeah.
You know, it was really a neat place.
Sure
I don't think the other guys with me caught anything, to be honest with you. We couldn't get on a lot of water.
The other thing that I thought was real cool is after the guided trip was over in Estes Park, so the wife and I went into the park and I fished some in there, the streams in the park, and I actually caught a cutthroat, which was really cool. Now, they're no bigger than a cigar. I mean, they're really small. But, of course, I didn't have any idea of what to use, so I think I put a small Renegade on. And like the second cast out, boom. But, of course, that was the only one. But still, it was fun. It was a blast.
Nice. The what was I going to ask you when you said that? I'm getting like you now, Dad. Great. Trout. So,
trout. Oh yeah,
trout. I forgot we're talking about freaking fish. What? You've obviously caught a bunch of fish, the both of you. You ever caught what they call a lunker?
Not in a trout. No.
Not in a trout.
No.
It's like a big
a trout was maybe 3 pounds, 3 pounder.
I'd have to say the same thing. Yeah.
I don't know what is considered a lunker.
Yeah. No, I did lose one, I think, that was about 14 pounds, well, if I remember correctly.
What'd you say?
I said I lost one, I think, was about 14 pounds.
Of course.
So did I. We can all say that.
Yeah.
But down at Bennett,
they're not very big.
They actually
but they
have
are
a
some
lunker
big ones in there.
Club at Bennett, and it has to be at least 2 pounds.
Yeah, that's where I heard that term.
Considered a lunker.
There's lunker in every fishing category. There's lunkers in bass. There's lunkers in walleye, which I have fly fished for walleye, too, but caught pike. I was trying to catch
you caught them, though.
Pikes, that's a fun fish to catch.
That was a great time, actually.
When I was little, well, I guess I was probably around probably around 12 or whatever, we'd go up to Minnesota and we'd go up there and go pike fishing and stuff. Yeah. Man, that those things put up a fight.
Yes, I they mean, do. It's and insane. Even when you get them in the boat.
Oh, yeah. The yeah. Teeth. The, yeah.
Speaking of that, speaking of Minnesota, so we also, with some other friends of ours, John and Linda Boyd, we took a trip to Minnesota. And in the southeastern part of the state, there's an area, the town I do not remember, but the
was that the same one I went with you?
Oh yeah, Micah. Yeah, Micah, you and
yeah, Andy you're forgettable.
Went. Yeah,
I guess
yeah.
so. They were out fishing. I mean, they weren't worried about me.
So we went the Root River is what the river was.
Yeah,
and the thing about that was it was all private water. So the only way you could get to the water was it was on somebody's land. So if anybody ever goes up there, you better get permission to go under their property, because who knows.
Sure.
But anyway, it was fun. We caught a couple fish up there, nothing really to write home about, but it was still fun.
No, but that's what's cool about Missouri's got a lot of options for
yes. a lot of different
everybody,
fishing you can do.
Mm-hmm. And every different fishing, hunting. Mm-hmm. Hell, we're hunting freaking elk now in our state.
Yeah,
I mean, so there's a lot of options, and I've really only fly fished at Bennett Springs with you guys. I mean, and I haven't done it now in years. It you know we've went camping with you guys before, but I haven't fished in quite a while. And Bennett is pretty cool. I mean, and I can see what you mean. In the summer, it's full crowded. Of people. Yeah. I got another buddy that goes down there with his kids all the time. I tried taking Kylie and Caden one time when we went with you and Mom, and not going to happen. Yeah. This is not going to work.
Just too many people.
And I think that's where the ultralight comes into play. It's mm-hmm. it's easier to teach a little one, you know, to get the thing in the water, because it's not a whole lot different than a little Zebco Snoopy pole.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, they've got three zones. They've got zone one and two are all artificial. And then zone three is live bait. So that's
where the
see,
corn comes in.
That's right.
Where you see all the that's where you see all the kids. We do
it's
know
live in the can. Sorry.
We do know somebody
the
that,
what in the can?
Live.
We do know an individual that actually makes little jigs, if you will, that are that imitate the little, you know, the little thing you put the quarter in
food
and you
pellet.
Get the food pellets. Yeah, we know somebody that makes those and puts a little hook in there. But
I bet that works pretty good, actually.
Yeah, especially it, when actually, they're coming right out of the hatchery.
Yeah,
so, I caught 40.
Hey, there's one.
Yeah, I caught 40 fish. Well, okay. But
fishing in a rain barrel,
that's where I need to be then.
Yeah. Well, that'd be a good one.
Well,
for
I tell you what, it gets you interested in it.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
for sure.
Nothing sucks more than fishing and not catching anything.
Yeah,
that's what's so much fun about fishing is you can, well, like Doug was talking about in our bass episode, I can catch 10 pound bass in one day if I want to. If you go deer hunting and you tag out on a buck on October 1st, you're
that's
done.
It. Yeah.
At you're least done. Until rifle season.
Yeah.
For a buck. But that's what's cool is you can just kind of keep having that rush
catch
of
and release.
Adrenaline.
Yeah, well, catch and release on. Or just, you know, get your limit for the day and then come back the next day and get mm-hmm. your limit or whatever.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, so.
Well, that's what a lot of people at Bennett do. They'll get up and be out there with the horn going off to catch their limit, which is four at Bennett. And then a lot of times those people get out, but a lot of times they'll fish on through the day. I like to go a little bit later when hopefully the crowd thins out a little bit on the water. That's what I like to do.
Then everybody has the exact same idea as you, and they're all going later.
Well,
yeah, pretty soon they will. But, yeah, no, there are most people like to be out there at the – I've never been on that water when the
– horn goes off.
Yeah,
oh, really?
Never. Yeah. Only yeah. when it's off for a time to leave, yeah, then I'm there. But
then,
not
yeah,
in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do not get on that water that early.
Dad, you told me something kind of cool about Bennett, which I need to get a hold of them sometime. But at the spring itself, you said there is some people that go have gone diving.
Oh, yeah. Especially in the wintertime.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty
cool.
There's
films online that you can watch.
Yeah. Yeah. And that hole's, I believe it's 84 feet deep. And
they've gone all the way down and in there.
Yeah.
You know, there's trout down that far, too.
They're way down there. Yeah, you look, do a YouTube video on it.
There's all kinds of them.
That's kind of freaky.
Yeah.
It is.
Freaked me out.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah, a picture I got of you and Kylie actually is right there in between where that, I call it that castle tower by the spring.
The gauge.
In between that and the spring is where that photo came. So that water is bright, you know, bluish green.
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful.
The sun was hitting it. Yeah, it is.
It really
gorgeous.
Is a pretty park down there. It's very pretty.
Yeah. That's why I have nothing against Bennett. I just wish they would make it bigger. Because
give me more.
It is getting so crowded down there. Now they changed the camping where it used to be a 6 month where you could reserve camp spots down there. But they changed that to a year.
Wow.
So it's going to be even
tougher. Knows what they're going to do a year out.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's part of the reason Becca and I, there's other reasons, but we had a fifth wheel, a cheaper one we went and bought, and we sold it because with four kids, we're sitting there going, how the hell are we going to know what we're doing 6 months from now?
Yeah, right.
And then,
now
you know,
it's a year.
Now we have a month and we're like, hey, we can go camping this next weekend. Well,
nowhere to go.
Good luck finding a reservation.
Yeah, you're not going to find a spot.
Yeah, which it's awesome that people are getting outside more.
There's no doubt about it.
You know, it's a good thing. You want more fishermen. You want more hunters out there because that leads to more conservation efforts for the resource that you're going after. I mean, fishermen and hunters are the biggest conservationists there are.
Yeah, they put in more money than any other.
The ones that are killing the animal want that animal to be healthy. It's this perfect little circle of life type of deal.
Circle of life, yeah.
Yeah. So, what else you got for them, Micah?
I don't know. I can't think of anything offhand. Do we got anything written down?
Nope. Yeah. I know, Dad, you took more notes than I've ever seen you write in my life.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive, really. Yeah,
well, I just wanted to write some stuff down and just kind of keep things going in my own mind. But
he's got better handwriting than I'll ever have.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think that was fun. I mean, we like to talk about different type of fishing instead of all the fishing that you can do in one show. We're trying to break them up and talk about, you know, trout fishing and bass fishing and we're going to have a lot to do in this state.
But fly fishing, you can actually fish for anything.
For anything. That's really true.
Not
that's true.
Catfish.
Oh, yeah. You don't have to catch this trout.
Yeah.
I've bass fished with the fly rod.
That's true. Yeah. Have y'all ever fly?
You don't see it very often, but.
Well, actually, you do.
I don't see it very often, I guess.
But you don't see videos or anything.
Y'all ever been on the Missouri River fly fishing? Do people do that?
I've never seen anybody do that on the Missouri. Okay.
You can take a fly rod and fish in the ocean with it.
I've seen those.
Oh, they're
10 and 11, 12-weight fly rods.
A little bit heavier duty.
Yeah.
And even up in Canada, when I was doing using my fly rod for the, I was going for walleye, but actually smallmouth bass and the pike. But it was probably an eight-weight rod that I borrowed from Matt, and it was awesome.
Those bigger ones are two-handed fly rods. So you're like this. But
that's pretty impressive.
Kind of like, you know, deep sea fishing, rods and reels.
I mean, I've been deep sea fishing a few times, and I mean that's awesome. I mean, if you get on the fish, it's nonstop. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been shark fishing, been down the deep water, redfish, and all that stuff. My cousin, he's actually a captain now, and he takes people out fishing.
Really?
Cool. Yeah, he's over there in South Carolina.
Yeah. Well, what's his number?
Oh, I got it for you. We'll get a trip together, and we'll go down there. We'll go do some fishing. I think he mostly fishes the inland side or whatever. And those, it's some type of trout, I think. What was it? A redfish or something. I can't remember what it was, but he's big into it. It's cool.
I got a friend that's in Alaska now fly fishing and just sending picture after picture.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, stop.
Yeah.
You're killing me.
You're making me sick.
Yeah.
Or some of these
6, 7, 8 pounders.
These big whitetail hunters that are on public ground. One of the podcasts I listened to, he will deer hunt, let's say, until lunch. And sometimes if he's in a different state that might have a public stream close, he'll go fish for a little while in the middle of the day and then come back and get
duck hunting.
You know, get back in his stand. That's pretty cool.
Duck hunt in the morning.
That's getting the entire outdoor experience right there.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
Well, and the other thing that people can fish that kind of get put on the back burner and forgot about is ponds. The biggest fish I ever caught was in the pond on your land.
Yeah, that bass.
And, yeah, that bass.
I got a photo of that still.
Yeah. And so it's pretty awesome.
That was long enough ago now, I bet that fish is dead, but we did put him back.
Yes, we did.
And I don't recall anybody ever catching another one that big. So he's either still in there lurking around or he's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows?
How many pounds do you think he was?
I think it was somewhere between 7 and 8.
That's what I was thinking. He was big.
Yeah. And that was a bass, right?
Mm-hmm.
Largemouth.
Largemouth, yeah.
Good times.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I thought he was going to break because I was using the St. Croix ultralight I have downstairs. I thought he was going to break that thing off. He hammered it.
Yeah.
And then you go next door and you catch 1,000 of those little bass.
Yeah, my neighbor's pond.
You were with us.
Yeah,
when we were.
Every cast.
Yep.
Yeah.
20.
Yeah.
22.
Yeah.
He needs to refer back to our pond management one.
Well, he's gotten his dam fixed. So now his pond's deeper.
So that will help a little bit.
Well, we should take fly rods out there.
Yeah.
Doug would let you in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Yep. Doug's a great guy.
Yeah,
so
anytime we wanted to fish, he's all, yeah, go ahead.
I'm ready to go.
So
yeah,
absolutely.
Well, thanks for coming on, guys, talking some fly fishing.
All right.
I thought there's only two guys I know that are great fly fishermen, and that's my dad and my uncle. So
worked out pretty good.
Better than me.
Doing something right.
We have fun.
You catch fish.
You're better at elk hunting than we are. So
my friend Lem, he was a great. It's all in the casting. If you guys would see him cast, just watching him was awesome. I mean, it's just beautiful. And that fly would go out, and it would sit there, it seemed like, for 10 minutes, and then just float down to the stream. How do you do that? Well, I get about 1 in 10 in there real good. So
That's the same thing. And that's about right.
It is an art.
I'd watch you and Dad. You know, I'd look upstream, watch you, and I'd see that thing and just kiss the water.
When you get a good one, it's like, yeah.
And I'm like, all right, I'm going to do that. Smack. Big old splash, damn it.
There's one person, I'm not going to name names, and it's nobody here at this table, but I can't even tell her how to do it. And I'll tell her right here and just wait for it to load and put it back. The next thing I see is, I see you're not cracking a bullwhip there.
I know who you're talking about.
Well, they probably see it on all these TV shows or movies or something. That's what you see out there. The people just going like this, back and forth.
It's just so funny.
It's a skill.
I mean, you just got to feel it. Anybody can do it. You just got to know what you're feeling for.
And
you really
got to
have somebody that knows how to teach it.
Yeah. Maybe look up some, if you don't, maybe look up some YouTube videos or something like
that.
Well, like
in a movie, a river runs through it, I think it's called.
Yeah, that's it.
That's really, I mean, if you watch the fly fishing part of it, not the movie part, but it's really awesome.
That's what got me interested into it.
Oh, really? When they're actually doing the casting on their fly rods, it's awesome. It's an art.
Yeah.
And so if anybody that doesn't fish that wants to get into some fishing, that would be my suggestion is get you go to Bass Pro, get you a fly rod,
call Matt
one.
Rainbow Fly Shop.
Yeah.
He can fix you up with something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Call Matt.
Or
he's a good guy.
There's a million, every different body of water down.
No, Matt's the only one. Nowhere else. Just call Matt.
Not everybody lives in Independence. You know,
when he hears this,
did he pay you?
Yeah, exactly.
That sponsorship money.
Yeah,
Rainbow Fly Shop, Independence, Missouri.
Yeah, but you drive down to like Bennett or Taneycomb or
go to a shop.
There's fly shops everywhere. You're right.
And the way Doug was, just walk in there and say, I don't know what I'm doing. What do I need to get started?
Mm-hmm.
And most of those places, Bass Pro's got a place down there. Fly, is it called the Fly Shop?
I don't know. That's, well, they even sell Orvis stuff, don't they? Yeah.
Rambo Fly Shop in Independence, they've got stuff. I mean, if you just walk in and say, hey, I'd like to get into this.
I got X amount of money.
I've got $300.
He knows exactly what you do.
Yeah. He could put you, like my first fly rod was a used one. I mean, he's going to have some used fly rods in there. He can set you up for probably $300 or less.
There you go.
You know.
And teach you how to use it.
Yeah. And teach you how to use it. Send you out in the parking lot. And Matt's been in fly fishing his whole life. He ties flies if you go in there and order some.
Yeah.
But that's Independence. A good place if you're somebody's going to Branson and wants to try to do a little fly fishing. River Run Outfitters, and they didn't pay me to say this, but I used them twice when we went to Tanicomo, only because, like we talked earlier, when they have units running at the dam.
You need a boat.
You need a boat. And so I've used them twice, and they have drift boats, and both times caught all kinds of trout. No trophy trout, because between the dam and Fall River, which is about 3 miles, they call that the trophy area. I haven't caught a trophy yet. But,
yeah, they're all trophies in there, right?
That's right.
But,
yeah.
It's still a blast.
Yeah. Any hobby that's worth its weight is going to cost a little bit of money. You know, anything. I mean, mm-hmm. fly fishing, bow hunting. Mom likes to
sew.
So.
Yeah,
all of it costs money. You know, I mean, it doesn't have to be as much as some people go crazy on, but it's going to cost a little bit to get into, and then you can get a hobby that you might do forever. I mean, Dad, I remember when you first got into fly fishing. It's been 15, 20 years now, or whatever, and mm-hmm. probably going to do it until you can't walk anymore.
Probably
next week for me.
Is that when you can't walk anymore?
It seems like it. It's like, come on. But walking in that water is actually a little therapeutic because it's so
cold.
It
is. Well, and you get out, you know this, Chuck. You go in the water and you get out, your legs are so stiff. It's like, man.
We didn't even talk about waders.
No.
I remember my dad gave me a pair of waders when I first started. And the next time we went to go down there with him, it was a while later, he goes, oh, actually, you can't use those anymore. They got felt on the bottom.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah,
what?
You can't use the
I gotta
felt.
Go buy well, waders
it wasn't,
now.
It wasn't the waders, it was the boots.
It was the boots, yeah, but they were all one piece.
Yeah.
Damn it. So, you can spend some money.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Definitely waders, spend some money. I mean, you can spend, I think, probably around $500 on a, the top of the line waders, but yeah, you can get a beginner set for probably $100.
Oh, that's what, I mean, mine were just a cheap on insulated Cabela's set that you gave me. Mm-hmm. Probably your first set when you got into it cheap and
probably
kept them and then let me use them.
Yeah.
I think I might even still have them sitting downstairs somewhere. Don't know why. But anyway, thanks for coming on, fellas.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Oh, it was a blast.
Good fish talk.
I'm ready to do this again.
Yeah, we'll do it again sometime.
Go catch a lunker and you can tell us a story on Tales of the Chase.
There you go.
Okay.
Shameless plug.
Tales of the Chase.
All right. We'll holler at y'all later.
See ya.
All right.
All right. That's the show. That was a good one, man.
That was. Yeah. That was a lot of fun.
The biggest thing I'm excited about with this show is Andy's not here to make some stupid-ass joke, some stupid dad joke that he makes about right now.
But if he was, what dad joke would he say?
I'm actually trying to think of one
That's
in
what
my
I'm
head
trying to do, but I can't
that
think
he would make.
I don't have the dad joke
We
brain.
Really jumped the brook on this one.
Yeah.
That's about all I can think of. I just did it. I'm sitting here saying I'm happy Andy's not here to make the joke, and I just freaking did one.
That's all right. We'll roll with it.
But anyway, that was a lot of fun. I look up to my dad, my uncle, and they definitely know what they're doing with fly fishing. So they are the ones that I thought of when we did this, thought about doing this episode.
So hope you guys enjoyed it.
Yep. Thanks for coming.